Welcome to the Fuel Podcast, a show about winning new business for creative marketing, PR, advertising, and digital agencies. Fuel is brought to you in association with The Advertist, the new business development platform for people committed to agency growth. Every day, Advertist clients have access to tools and insight to make their new business prospecting timely, relevant, and powerful. Advertist clients are the best and brightest of the new business agency and in-house channels, and we're proud to help them win business through our daily news, people moves, tenders, merger, acquisition, and funding updates, and bespoke lists to support all of their new business needs. You can find The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com. That's theadvertist.com. Or you can phone us on 0203 356 3717. Before we get into the meat of the show, let's partake of a little starter from our resident new business raconteur, Jeremy Davis, and get his take on the world of sales.
There are few things more exciting to a new business person than innovation. It's the gift that keeps on giving. The development and launch of products glistens with potential new business opportunities. Research, brand design, launch campaigns, PR. These days, of course, with the wonders of technology and the digital revolution, there's hardly anything that can't in some way be augmented by technology. But just because it can, it doesn't always mean it should be. Let me give you, for instance, consider, if you will, the all-inclusive breakfast buffet. Now, obviously, travel and tourism has benefited hugely from the advent of technology, and the consumer experience in these days of TripAdvisor, online check-in, and speedy boarding is undeniably better for it. But the breakfast buffet is one place where things have gone too far. Don't believe me? Well, take the simple act of making a piece of toast. Now, I'm no Luddite, but I don't think the humble domestic toaster can be improved upon. Certainly not by one of these industrial-sized toast factories you get in hotels these days. The kind of contraption that looks like something out of a Dr. Seuss book. And should be called something like the Toastmaster 2000. It's enough to put you off altogether, but sometimes, on even the most gastronomically extravagant holiday, you crave the simple pleasure of a piece of toast. And so you approach the Toastmaster 2000, slice of bread in your hand, and gingerly place it into the rotisserie, and watch as it slowly, oh so slowly, disappears into the innards of the machine. Time passes. The seasons change, empires rise and fall, and eventually your slice of bread drops limply into your eager hands, and it's slightly warm to the touch. Disappointed, but still bewitched by tantalizing visions of crisp, golden toast just like you used to get as a kid, you stick it back in and settle down to wait once more. More time passes. Hell freezes over. But eventually, your slice of toast reappears, and it's burned blacker than the darkest night. Chastened and disappointed, you make your way back to your table, pausing to pick up extra sachets of butter in the hope of disguising the taste of charcoal, and wishing that just for once, technology had left well enough alone, and reflecting, as a salesperson, that features and benefits don't always match up.
That is a real point of difference in what we do. It doesn't mean to say that the other methodologies aren't right for different types of agencies, but I think it really comes down to being bespoke, being thought out, being authentic, having integrity, having experience, and just debunking that whole sales approach myth of, you know, more is more, sell, sell, sell. You know, it's hideous.
Well, that's...
I hate it.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, you can't tell. Anyone that works in the new business industry is more than aware of the common misconceptions that people who don't work in it or don't understand it have about us. We're hired guns. When times get tough, you plug us in, and within 3 months, we're generating new clients and new business for you because everyone wants what you're making, right? Wrong, 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 wrong on so many levels, it's painful. I'm aware there's still the odd posse out there that wheel in the dealmakers who have the work done by greenhorns, but these are snake oil vendors in a world of genetic engineering, nanotechnology and rocket science. All you need to be aware of are the common myths and fears that these operators rely on, how to avoid them, and how to identify the genuine rainmakers. Natasha Ellard-Shufield is the real deal. Born of the publishing industry, she cut her teeth in the nascent new business industry, working for one of the companies that nurtured formidable sales talent. But you don't want to hear me banging her drum. Natasha offered to come on the show and bust five of the most common myths that surround our industry to help you make better hiring and buying decisions when it comes to the business of new business. So let's do this.
Energizing, yeah.
When people describe my guest this week, phrases range from helpful and sensible to a whirlwind of enthusiasm. They describe her as having a passion for her profession and someone who always overdelivers. This is why I asked Natasha Ellard-Shufield to come on the show. The issue I wanted to address in this episode is a client-side problem that affects every area of new business. Misunderstandings and misinterpretations between marketing and digital communications agencies and what they expect from a relationship with a new business agency and what a new business agency needs to be able to do in order to do its job more effectively. So I asked Natasha if she could apply some of her industry knowledge to addressing five of the most common myths of new business to help agency owners make a more informed choice of supplier and to understand what is needed to keep the relationship thriving and producing results. So friends, Romans and country people, please welcome Natasha Ellard-Shufield of The Hand.
Hi, Keith. Thanks for inviting me today.
Thanks for coming on the show. Now, if anyone is going to help our listeners savvy up on the basics of new business, it's you, Natasha. So hopefully we'll be able to blow through a few misconceptions. But first of all, thanks for coming on the show. And I hope you and your loved ones are all doing well.
We are. Thank you. Yes.
Excellent. And before we just before we sort of kick off the myth busting side of it, I just wanted to explore. How did you get into this industry? What kind of brought you here?
It was a path from, I graduated in the mid-90s and my degree was social sciences and art, so it wasn't vocational, but it gave me a hunger and an interest in people and understanding how people work together in organisations and as individuals.
Right.
And I fell into media. I went into media sales and then progressed my way as a junior, you know, sales exec on various magazines to work for a publishing house, which at the time was a management buyout out of EMAP, whom owned a lot of trade publications and events. And I worked my way through that organization to become, you know, event director and a group business manager. So very much sales with marketing driving it.
Right.
And then I experienced the marketing and creative world through having agencies work on the shows and activities that we were involved in. And I got a passion for it. And then I went off, you know, I'm in my mid-40s now, just before my 30s. And I thought, I've seen the crash and boom of the internet first time round. This is really interesting. I thought the world was changing rapidly. And I got some in-house experience at one of the large new business agencies of that time. And I thought of the marketing mix. Of course, I've worked across the whole marketing mix, you know, through the line, below the line, above the line. I enjoy it all for different reasons. It was creative and design that really inspired me. I think because it's visceral and it is visible.
Yep.
And you can really get to grips with what's, you know, it's a very, very tactile, real thing. And the people in it are very nice and authentic, which is important. And I went off and got a job with Euro RSCG Havas to work in-house at Conran Design Group on their business development and to work within Havas as well. And I was seconded within different agencies in the group. And that was a real experience to be within an agency and see how it works and get to know some of the things that I thought were superb about being within it and things because of my experience in other industries, you know. And then the idea for The Hand was born.
Right.
And was set up in 2005.
Okay.
And you know, I've been working collaboratively with my clients and with my team. Most of my team I've worked with for several years and a lot of my clients ever since.
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah. And so, I mean, would you say that you really do need to be a kind of a people person to be in this industry?
Yes, I mean, it's become a bit of a phrase, but people, it's not that so much that people buy from people, because of course they do,
sure.
But it's you need to have a genuine interest in your clients and what makes them tick, and them as people as well as what they do, because the kind of speak about USPs, which becomes a bit tired. People don't really understand what that means. Essentially, a USP is the people that make that agency and make that agency different, and their passion and their thirst and their hunger. And it's important that a new business consultant, of which I believe the hand are, we are consultants who fulfill on every aspect, from strategy through to completion, lead generation, etc., but not just the output. You've got to have that interest in those people. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, thank you very much for that. That sort of sets the scene for us. So, if it's okay, let's just dive straight into the business of new business and onto the myths. And number one, here's one that we can all absolutely relate to, which is too much too soon. Now, there's a saying that although less can be more, and when it comes to sales, more is more, but more discounts and the more money, the more you have, the more you name it. I'll even lean on the old 1984 comedy movie Spinal Tap, where guitarist Nigel Tufnell boasts that his amps have all got volumes that go up to number 11, meaning that more is more than acceptable.
Very special, because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Yeah, I think more is more. That there are two aspects to this, if I may. There's one which is that if you're loud enough or you're broad enough in your outreach, that something's going to stick.
Right.
And actually, an agency, whether it's dealing with its new business internally or using an agency such as ours or the plethora of other new business outfits that there are out there to choose from, if the emphasis is on volume and on, to use your analogy, or on amount, you're actually less likely to get traction. I'll give you an example. There was a theory, and it's still pretty prominent now in astrophysics, and the search for life in the universe, and it looked at our solar system first, that said, what is it about the Earth that makes it unique and so special for life, assuming at the moment there isn't a lot of life out there that we know of, or there may not be any at all? Probably there is, but
let's hope not too much, eh?
but I'm looking forward to aliens coming down and fixing our world. So long as they're benevolent.
Who's to say they haven't already?
So the idea being that the Earth is at the right zone within our solar system, so that it's not too hot, hence Goldilocks, not too hot and not too cool to sustain life. But life as we know it, which is what we're looking for in new business, life as we know it. We want feeds, we want leads, and we want to feed things. So, feed the business with leads. So if you overpopulate your targeting, you end up, it's too hot. There's just too much to
deal
with.
Too close to the sun.
You don't get enough traction. More is more will not get what you need.
Right.
At the same time, if it's too few, it's too cold. So there is that kind of momentum that you need to have, but it's about knowing and being able to target efficiently and effectively the right amount of people at the right time. And I guess that's linked to some of the other myths that we're going to come on to shortly.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, effectively, I mean, you know, don't put it all out there in the sort of the first, the you know, the sort of first few moments of your new business activity. Sort of keep the interest bubbling.
Well, it's not just that. So that's one thing. One is, how do you keep a life cycle of engagement with a prospect? Because some people, they have an immediate need and you've hit them at the right time, of course, goes without saying. And the need that comes from either a pre-existing planning that they were going to do a review, roster, etc. It can also be because they've fallen out with their incumbent, something's gone wrong, that would be a reason. They've got a new head of marketing, CRO, et cetera, and that might drive something new. Okay, those are kind of set protocols for looking for new business. And how do you keep the relationship bubbling and interest and get the right information out of those prospects in order to be there when they are ready to buy? That's one thing. Right. That's about thought out life cycle and sustainability, which I think comes on to the idea of, you know, not being a sprint, it's a marathon, that we'll come on to later. But this is also about the volume of targets and knowing how many people, how many prospects, and whether it be by sector or whether it be by discipline, how many people you should be prospecting with at any one time.
Right.
And that the message has to come in manageable chunks. So what does an intro look like and why? It's the as you say, the reveal. So a show of an ankle rather than giving out on the first date. Probably to be a bit Victorian about it. You don't get a long-term relationship with someone generally who puts out on the first date. You get to know someone first.
Sure.
And that is very important in new business. Yeah.
And I think the other important point to this is that I've done it myself, that when you put together a list of potential prospects for new business, and when that list gets too long, because of the different engagement times, so you might get through to some immediately, it might take you 3 weeks to get through to others, you're actually trying to spin too many plates at any one time, and it can all get too confusing. And I mean, I'm sure everybody in our industry has got those horror stories of when you speak to somebody and they're sort of like, didn't we just have a phone conversation? And you're not quite sure that you've already trod that path as well. So I think that, you know, there is a comfort, like you say, that Goldilocks zone of just having enough contacts that you can handle at any one time, and you can manage the, you know, the ebb and flow of those conversations at any, you know, at any certain point.
And that comes from a strategic approach right at the very beginning of what you're doing, road mapping, funding,
right?
And
this is what you help clients with, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And when we get involved in strategy, it's not immersion. Obviously, immersion is part of it, but properly plugging in and looking at the financials, the fiscals, the business plan, where an agency's been to where it's going to go, and helping to overlay that with a very practical plan that deals with all the low-hanging and longer-term ambitions for the business, how it's going to get to its year one of engagement with ourselves, year two, year three, year five, year two, all the way through. Some smaller businesses want to look at exit strategies and how they're going to be bought or how they're going to retire.
Sure.
But whatever it is, it's fiscal at its core. And when it's fiscal at its core, really fiscal, so the focus isn't on just the type of opportunities, but where they can get you to, that means that you're planning over a series of weeks, months, some very accountable and traction gaining campaigns. So campaigns have a lifespan, and that's part of the road mapping process.
Fine. Okay. Well, that's very useful. On to myth number two, which is another one that I'm sure anybody working in our industry has experienced, and is that the priority of any new business campaign is just the number of meetings. And I mean, I remember when I first entered the world of new business, I mean, one of the critical measures of success was the number of meetings. I mean, it was, you know, it was always the sort of measure of how well you were doing. That while sort of clients feel that it was enough to secure meetings and that they could handle it from there on, usually unrehearsed, obviously, and walk away with the business. I mean, I think that's probably why this has become the next most popular myth to debunk. I mean, can you tell us where the thinking is out of whack on that?
I understand it, of course. New business isn't achieved through osmosis. You do have to, you have to engage with people. So there's an engagement point, and that engagement point involves a phone, email, networking events, etc. And then the fruit of that are the briefs, the meetings, etc.
Yeah.
Video conference, all that kind of stuff at the moment in this situation. However, if the focus is on the appointment, as it used to be known as in very kind of old-fashioned new business terms, and I believe some agencies still focus in that way, and on volume, the focus is moving towards quantity, not quality.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you don't obtain those opportunities, but you're doing it at the right stage in your prospects planning and strategic cycle, rather than kind of just pushing. And it's very, obviously I understand why agencies, client side, creative agencies, marketing agencies, design agencies, like the idea of being focused on meetings, because they're very obvious deliverables.
Sure.
And there's a belief often that once they're through the door or they're on that video call, that they can turn something into
money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes if they're very sophisticated and savvy, they can. I mean, the hand actually, as part of its raison d'etre, will hand hold, so to speak, and will be involved in meetings and in pitches all the way through whatever stage our client needs us to be. We're real rather than transparent people within their business. But even so, that's not true. If every meeting was going to turn into an opportunity, then, new business would be an easy matter. And it's not. It's difficult. It's skilled. It's not about just slamming out cold calls, being phone monkeys, making 60 to 80 calls a day. It's
sure.
It's not the answer with junior people who have no experience. New business, it does require tenacity and stamina. So youth is of its advantage.
Like us, so young folk.
I know, glowing in our middle-aged and positively glowing.
Still got it.
You still got it. But it actually requires soft skills, and a lot of new business focus is not about those soft skills. But when we come back to meetings, so fewer meetings of higher quality at the right time, absolutely.
Yeah. Right. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because I had a gentleman on the show not so long ago, a guy called Gordon Lee, who was talking on the explaining on the client side of things, how he's teaching brands and sort of CMOs the power of no, the power of when they are engaged by people prospecting for new business, that there's a degree on their side of things of being a people pleaser as well, in that they will often take a meeting because they don't want to say no, they don't want to put that down. So I think there's there has to be a kind of a new understanding, and maybe this kind of video calling and the sort of video meeting thing will actually help overcome that, is that there has to be a set purpose for that meeting. There has to be a reason for it. And so that both sides can actually come out of it thinking, okay, well, that was a valuable hour, 2 hours, whatever it happens to be, rather than just doing it because they're afraid that they didn't want to say no.
Yes, absolutely. That's critical.
Mm.
So that both sides are seeing value. Also, the other point on numbers, if focus is on the volume of the amount of meetings and that's how you're being measured, people who are responsible for that new business drive, they won't mean to. They'll want to do their best, but they'll shoehorn people into meetings because
yeah.
The focus is just on the numbers rather than on the potential project and on actually, and I think a lot of creative and design agencies and marketing agencies, they conflate the difference between research, qualification, and outreach or lead generation, as it's now called.
Yeah.
And actually, they shouldn't be conflated. They are separate things and done at different stages. And when they're done accurately and with the right technique and the listening skills and the soft skills that need to come into it, then you're actually getting the right information and going in, you're meeting at the right stage, and that's what's important, is patience and timing.
Exactly. I mean, it's got to be a meeting of two commercial objectives. I mean, one from the agency and one from, you know, the client side of things, that like you say, it's that sort of, if I can borrow your analogy again, that the Goldilocks moment is often comes sometimes in that relationship as well, where there's a need and a supply to that need, and when those two get together as well. I mean, I think it's a lovely occasion when that does happen, when somebody says, well, it's interesting you called because we just happen to be looking at something right now. I think that's the most beautiful phrase you need to hear in new business. But okay, well, thank you very much. That's two down. Now, myth three is an interesting one. Basically, I think myth three is that sales is a plug-in resource. And I've kind of lost count of the number of business development agency owners who can recall the times when they've been brought into a company in a sales role, and they're made to feel, or they're sort of genuinely actually feel like an outsider who's kind of left alone to bring in the business. So when potential clients tell you that they believe sales is a standalone part of the business, I mean, how do you respond to that?
A business that silos its new business function, its business development function, is one that won't thrive. And it's probably more likely to exist in those very kind of old school parameters of volume, numbers, you know, cracking the whip, are you on the phone, we've given you a brochure, we've set
the boiler room.
Where are the meetings? Where are the meetings? Yeah. When it's joined up, and having seen it from the inside as well as from the outside, and this is part of how we work with agencies, so we feel very much part of the inside of that agency setup. Good agencies that get it right, new business isn't siloed. It's almost a seamless journey between the person who is responsible for new business and a really good client services director or account manager. In fact, very good client services and account managers are excellent at new business and farming new business, you know.
Right.
Because they've got that thirst, the experience, the interest, etc. When it's separated, when you separate things out and you have people in that siloed way, you tend to, and I've written articles on this before for the Design Business Association, I'm on their experts panel, and it's in their library of resources for any of your listeners that are members of the Design Business Association. They can find it there. There's this idea, I think it comes from this, sometimes I say to clients, it's probably not the best analogy I'm going to use here, Keith, but new business is a bit like being a cross between being someone's plumber. So people suck their teeth and think, gosh, that's expensive. Is sales really worth all that? And they need you to fix their boiler, right? And they need maintenance on their boiler. So that's technical. They can't do it themselves because it is technical. It's not just about the tenacity and willingness to pick up the phone. There is skill involved in selling.
Sure.
And there is a process. But also, we're a bit like bin men as well, because we're dealing with this. You need your bins collected, but you don't want to do it yourself either. And sometimes that's slightly, there's a bit of a Glenn Ross culture in some agencies still there. And there's this idea that sales is somehow murky. It exists beneath the agency's shiny reputation and output. Therefore, really, if an agency is really great, it shouldn't need any sales function, new business function. It should just get new business from its just existence alone. Its gravity, its reputation, its referral should pull new business in. Now, of course, some agencies are excellent at this and do get new business through their reputation, but you also need a pipeline.
Sure.
So when people are siloed, what happens is there's a disconnect. So it means that someone isn't fully immersed in the agency culture. They don't understand perhaps all the processes that involve the leads when they're generating them aren't being fed through in a way in which the knowledge that's gained in all those months and weeks of calls and emails and correspondence aren't fed through into that meeting.
Yeah.
Sometimes the people within the agency are fronting the meeting, they may be creative but not very good at sales themselves, because actually within an agency, you all need to be ambassadors of the sales process.
There you go.
You all need to understand, because every single one of us and every communication we make is selling something to someone. You know, we might be negotiating a holiday with a loved one, would that we could at the moment. We might be looking at a new home to buy, etc. So everything's about negotiation. It's all about discussion. But within an agency, sometimes I saw it in previous, you know, with agencies I've worked with in the past, the ones that get it right are very good at going in and asking questions, because that is the root of selling. It's about having an inquiring, interested mind, to go back to your first point, in people and about how those businesses function and what their needs are. And when it's joined up, it works really well. But when it doesn't, it goes wrong. And those meetings don't progress.
No, and I think that, you know, again, to the point about siloing off people, is that I've worked in video games development, and it was a great example of a video games company that, in one hand, was very focused on, or hyper focused on, selling the game that it had just finished and was trying to monetize that, but an inquiring salesperson, me, was more interested in what was coming down the pipe and what was being worked on, because you're often using that kind of product development to sell in the existing quality of, you know, of a product as well. So you're actually showing that you've got more product coming through, you've got more skills being developed, and you're actually talking about stuff that's actually in process at the moment. And I think, you know, if you push your new business people out onto the fringes of the company, they don't often get involved in those kind of conversations, and therefore they can't pass those on to the end users, which are, you know, which is the most important part of it, surely.
Yeah, I mean, knowledge is king. Yeah. Knowledge sharing, as parables, as examples, as analogies, as case studies, if you were, through to gaining information. And that's, and if you don't have that at hand, if it's kept from you, and you're given very limited propositions as salespeople, then you won't progress, and you won't progress those leads. It's just luck, and you get those very shallow meetings instead of deeper ones that are more meaningful, like relationships.
No, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's great, and I think the next myth is definitely related to the first one about accelerated timescales, and but they also apply to the business development role itself, with clients and employers sort of fingers tend to sort of hover over the eject button after just about 60 days, and you know, 3 months, you must be joking, mate. So myth four is, it's not a marathon, it's a sprint. It's unrealistic to expect business to start flooding in after 60 to 90 days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. What I mean by that is, yes, there will be some lack of timing. And if your proposition is right and quite accurate from the outset, because the within the agency, you've got experience and expertise at knowing what some of your client types are interested in, whether so that's a psychographic purchase for the types of buyer that they are, or whether it be some kind of sector or industry facet at that moment, great. But the rest of it is about test and learn. So you're testing a market with a proposition,
right?
That you're fine-tuning as you go along. And generally, and it depends on the genre of work that you're trying to find. So if I were dealing with a retail design agency, and they said to me, look, Natasha, I'd really like within our mix of work that we win with you. So we might want pop-ups, and we might want shopping shops. We might also want a rollout of 400 new stores for whomever. I'm at this moment, the mind beggars who that might be, but just imagine it was a different situation. Retail design would take 12 months to 15 months or more to get that quality of work.
This is from a cold, if you're going into an industry cold.
From cold, and for the very big 400 store rollout.
Yeah? Gotcha.
Whereas if you're looking at shorter, quick win projects, where a large project for a design agency that's of a medium size, i.e. it's turning over around £1 million a year, that would be a medium size design agency in the UK. A large one would be 4 million, and very large, they suddenly jump upwards. You know, different for design or digital, where, you know, the agencies can turn over tens of millions very rapidly in that sector. You know, a win may be much quicker to achieve, but you still need to build up those relationships. So generally, you're looking at a client needs to, and when I mean by client, I mean an agency itself needs to realise that new business takes 6 to 12 months to start seeing ROI fiscally.
Right.
And sometimes, depending on the genre, longer. So it has to be a very collaborative, translucent relationship between agency and new business person, whether they be internal or an agency like ours, because to expect more soon, that's just the bonus, the icing on the cake.
Right.
The rest is the hard work and building up those relationships. If a business wants to rebrand, you're not going to wind that up and see it through within 3 months. There are going to be several meetings. And fortunately, we're a business that will attend those meetings as well if someone wants that, but we don't have to. It depends on how sophisticated our clients are and what their size are. But, you know, it's going to take meetings, it's going to take proposals, it's going to take that length of time to bring that off, and probably competitive pitch scenarios as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is a marathon, and it takes stamina, tenacity, and the soft skills as well. And a thought out, going back to some of these previous points, what's your touch point going to be? You're not going to pick up the phone or email again 6 months later when they said, well, we're not ready yet, but we will be then. And say, you weren't ready last time, are you ready now? That's not going to go down well. You have to think about ways of invigorating and stimulating the relationship.
Right. Yeah. So if we're talking about a six to 12 month window on this, I mean, what do you say are the, or in your sort of judgment, what are the kind of signs that a business development campaign is actually starting to gain traction, that you're getting somewhere with it?
It's the conversations, the feedback, as you'll know, as a professional, a buying signal is when someone asks you questions back. It's just like dating. Someone shows you interest by showing interest back. They ask you questions.
Sure.
It's the same in a new business campaign. You start to see the opportunities bubble up. We use a sales pipeline with our businesses that we work with that sits within the roadmap, so you can very transparently see the opportunities arise, and we put percentages against them that are quite rigorous and robust to look at the likelihood of outcome. And you start to see, you know, what the numbers are looking like, and quality. So it's not so much about volume, it's about, we've had three or four very interesting conversations here. What are they leading to? What do we think the potential is here? And that's how we judge it. And test and learn, for me, without giving too much away, is not a typical new business agency approach, which is targeting, I don't know, 150 companies within a quarter.
Right.
It's much fewer, and it's much more desk research and insight driven, and focused on the quality. And you might be looking at a fraction of that.
Right.
That outreach will obtain more. So it's not, one of my clients once said, we don't want spray and pray. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly it. That's wrong. More isn't more, as we said at the beginning.
Especially these days as well. I mean, you know, sort of given this, the environment that we're all now working in, I think the numbers game has definitely come to an end now. And, you know, people often talk about the death of the cold call. I don't subscribe to that theory. What I do subscribe to, though, is the death of the mass mailer. I think those sorts of things, certainly in a B2B environment, are those things are over now. And people want to know that you've done your research before you even speak to them.
Also, a cold call is what it sounds like. It's cold, you know.
Yeah.
So there is a death of the cold call, in the sense of what we think of is a cold call, Keith. I'd think of it as someone calling me up when I'm at work on my mobile phone, I'm seeing a client, and someone rings me up when I'm not even out of my phone contract to persuade me to swap phone contract. He's obviously from the call centre, doesn't know anything about me. Or they ring me up and tell me I've had an accident, which probably happened 5 years ago, you know. And actually, I'm not the friendliest when that happens. I just want to get off the call, and I'll just put the phone down if I have to, you know. So that's what the perception is of a cold call. Actually, you know, we don't get new business through osmosis. It does require that research, qualification, and then outreach. That outreach will involve the phone, but when you've thought through what the contact point should be, and it would never be the phone call first.
Yes.
You know, that's the death of the cold call, is that a call, you know, qualification and research is probably 60% of the work. When you've done that, you've got it right, and you've thought through your prospective target's eyes with them, as in whatever psychographic position they're in that business. Are they head of sales and marketing? They'll have a different function and emphasis. Are they a category marketing manager? Are they a brand manager? Are they marketing director for EMEA? Global, et cetera, they all have different needs, and you don't know absolutely what their needs will be from the outset. But if you target what you're saying in line with their position and what you know about that business and the insight and research that you've gone into and within the sector, it puts you in front of everyone else. And when you talk about mass mailers, non-personalized mass mailers, I'm always astounded by the amount of SEO businesses that target me overnight. They don't put their names in. It's just, hi. They don't know what my business does. They tell
Dear
me
XX. Dreadful,
with my website, of which it's not. It's cracking and does really well on Google. Thank you. There's not even a URL to click on. That's the worst example.
Yeah.
And I know marketing and design agencies do not do that. But that would be the example of that. That's more is more. They are just data mining. It's horrific. You know, and the more you can set out what you're doing and be people and individuals and come across to people as people and real, the more success you'll have.
It's really, isn't it? It's the very definition of the GDPR regulations. I mean, this is why it didn't freak me out when that first came up, because as far as people working in business development for or with agencies, it's legitimate interest in the fact that if you haven't done your research, if you haven't worked out that this is the right person for you to be talking to, and this isn't a good enough reason to talk to them, and if you're just punting something out there, then you're going to expect blowback, you know, sort of on that. But if you've done the right research, it should all work perfectly for us. And that's why I thought that the GDPR regulation was actually quite a good thing for our industry.
It is. There's nothing wrong. We are utterly GDPR compliant in our business because our clients own anything that we do for them. That's why, unlike a lot of new business companies and outfits, we insist on clients owning the CRM system and being completely translucent in what we're doing. We don't have fake calling names. We are who we are at the hand, and we work on behalf of our clients. You know? And I think that is a real point of difference in what we do. It doesn't mean to say that the other methodologies aren't right for different types of agencies, but I think it really comes down to being bespoke, being thought out, being authentic, having integrity, having experience, and just debunking that whole sales approach myth of, you know, more is more, sell, you know, it's hideous.
Well, that's...
I hate it.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, you can't tell. But okay, well, look, I think we can draw under a line underneath that one with basically consistency and stamina and things like that. And the last myth that I wanted to I wanted you to blow up was the idea that that new business isn't a get rich quick scheme. So if you need more money, you need to start selling. But now that we've got more revenue, let's go buy the Ferrari. You know, so myth number five is about committing to the sales process. And so why did you pick this one out especially?
It's interesting. I think generally the clients that we work with, and we've worked with most of ours for a number of years, understand the value of investment. New business is an investment.
Right.
Whether it's an internal staff member or it's us, because we're non-billable parts of the business. So it's an investment. And if you're dealing with startups, medium, and all the way through to large agencies, it's all an investment. And it has to be valued as such. And also the workload that goes into starting a new business campaign, it's like pushing, you know, it's pushing something up a hill in order for it to roll back and start collecting, you know,
right,
a snowball or something. It's the worst analogy to use now that we're hitting summer, but that's what struck me. At least I'm not talking about funnels. So what I'll often say to clients is that you're better off to put a little in and often over a sustained period of time, like a pension. I wish I'd started my pension early in life, I can tell you. I've got one now. And, you know, you don't put £5,000 in a year or 10 or £50, you know, a month or whatever it is that you're starting at,
right,
and expect it to return straight away. I'm not talking about a 20-year life cycle of new business, obviously, but, you know, to be sustained in your financial investment in new business is important, because it means that you can, you can see that growth, that investment grow over a period of time because it takes time and regular touch points. And I think if you just push everything in at the front end straight away, you're less likely to get the results because most of what new business is about is relationship building. Yes, there are quick wins to be had. And you'll hear other professionals in this industry say, you know, anything within the first 3 months is luck, et cetera, et cetera. Well, everything's about timing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's about whether the timing's right now or in a year or in 2 years or in 6 months or whatever that timeline might be, and maintaining contact in the right way that's not going to annoy someone, that's going to be meaningful, it's going to give benefit to them, and they're going to remember and recall you and hopefully take you with them when they need something and trust
right.
you.
Right, yeah.
And build that building rapport and trust. So it's investments are, you know, an important element of that.
The pension analogy is a fantastic one because it's a great example of how a smaller investment consistently done instead of just, you know, spurt in fits and starts and stuff like that, that if you're kind of consistent with a regular investment, that you almost don't notice it because it has become a regular part of your sort of expenses and stuff. So, you know, yeah. And then it builds up and suddenly you find yourself looking at the sort of the thick end of it and you're saying, well, you know, all those little pennies, they added up there. That was worthwhile.
But it's also about sustainability.
Yes.
Too much in new business.
You don't want to bankrupt yourself, obviously.
No, but it's about, there's too much emphasis, I feel globally, you know, as a globe, on growth rather than on sustainability. And I don't mean an environmental creds, but of course that comes in as well. Sustainability in new business is very, very important. An agency can put an awful lot of upfront work into its new business program. And it can be almost, I've spent £6,000 on this brochure once an MD told me. I've created this brochure. They hadn't listened to me because I didn't believe that a brochure was the way forward. I believe that you stagger your communications with different layers and you create interest. There's the tease to go back to this idea rather than the great reveal and then you negate the need to meet. You know,
right.
Don't send out your entire creds. Don't. Really
right.
Don't. Unless you're trying to meet with procurement and they might demand it. But really, try not to do that. Try to show a little and enough and to gain interest in that one area rather than going in with everything. You go in with everything, you turn someone off. It's desperate for a start. You know, it's like dating. It's like dating. A lot of this is like dating.
Well, I know you keep falling back on that as an analogy, but it is a relationship. Ultimately, it's a relationship.
It is. And also, the point about it is if you put £6,000 into your brochure, whether or not that's the right thing to do, and then you say to your new business internal staff member or external agency, right, get on the phone, send this out, get on the phone, where are the results? You've just kind of shoveled too much into a very short space of time, and there's often no stamina, budget, resource within the business to be bothered with it any longer at that agency. You know, it's about a thought out life cycle and sustainability, and that's where road mapping really, really is critical. And it's a 13 month road map, so you can look at that critical path year on year and learn as well,
right,
see those opportunities. So it's about where you put your efforts, and there's a lot of this that comes from experience but also from intuition, and you know, sitting down as partners in the new business process and planning that out quite thoroughly. So I think all of these myths are interconnected, really.
Right.
It's about strategy. It's about partnership, transparency, you know, planning, enough activity, but not too little, not too hot, not too cold, not more is more. Understanding what leads are viable and real and not just shoveling in any old opportunity because that's what you're being tasked on. You know, these are important things.
Well, you just beat me to the punch there. I was going to ask you for a quick summary, but you've just done a splendid job there. So so fantastic. Well done. You've done this before. But so just generally now, thank you very much for doing that. And I appreciate it. And just in summary, what we're going to do is we will take each of those myths and we'll put that up in the show notes so that people can just have a quick sort of go-to reference. And we'll put all of your sort of contact details on there as well. Sort of more generally now, I mean, we can't sort of do a podcast these days without referring to what's going on as sort of in the economy at the moment. I mean, how are you as an agency sort of adapting to the new environment? I mean, what coaching, what advice are you giving to clients on how to adjust to the new atmosphere?
Okay, so I think the situation poses some opportunities as well as difficulties. I think we all felt a sinking feeling as the world shifted sideways in March, however long it took us to acknowledge it and accept it. And I think it's true for the world as well as within new business that it's opened up opportunities as well as created difficulties. So what are the difficulties? Some of the difficulties are the ability to reach people, because some people may have been furloughed, some people may be working from home and screening their calls. Other people might be so busy, you've got to really make sure that your message gets cut through to get them to open your email and respond. So that's a reality, and it's probably about 50% harder to get results in this kind of environment for that reason, the reachability of people. But it is possible to do it if you're able to reach out to people in a very humane, professional and authentic way. And that's about tone of voice and the nature of the messaging. What it's given us back is phenomenal. People now do have the bandwidth to have a call with you, because it's not requiring, you know, meeting in an office, taking an office for an hour, etc. They can set these calls up, providing there's a need. People will not meet or agree to speak to you unless they've got any need or requirement at that point. They'll be pressurized into it, and it will be a pointless kind of stereotypical credentials meetings, which aren't very worthwhile unless you've got 10 people who are about to award lots of projects because it's a proper roster review. Do you know what I mean? It has to be relevant. What it's given us back is it's given us two things. One, a thirst to have conversation. So I've just said it's more difficult, but people are more willing to have conversation and dialogue because they've probably got their kids screaming in the background and their other half's in the other room and they've been working head down on a project all day. But to have a chat about their strategic bird's eye stuff, that's really great. Sure. You know? And they'll funnel that in. They've got more time in their lives to do that because they're not spending 4 hours a day commuting.
You know, sitting on the train, yeah.
It's given us space, but it's also given us focus, I think. And that's true in new business. And the way in which we're supporting our clients is understanding the pressures that they're under and the demands that they have, having very adult conversations with them about, you know, how their investments are looking and what's happening, and helping them in a very collaborative manner to convert what opportunities there are there and look in real ways at sectors that are delivering well at the moment in this market, of which there are several that are working very well at the moment, and encouraging them to have the stamina and the confidence to realise that if a meeting's not coming in this month or their opportunity, it doesn't mean it's not going to come in at the right moment when those clients are then ready.
Right. And
that's important, and that's why we're still working with our client base even in this situation, because they value that and they can see the fruits of it. The proof is in the pudding, you know.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That was a fantastic little summary there. So thank you very much.
Good.
But there you go. You've done the hard stuff now. The grilling and the inquisition is over. But outside of the agency, I mean, how do you tend to sort of switch off and relax? What do you use?
The two or three things. One, like most people, I've always enjoyed outside space and exercising, but I would find myself driving to the gym and doing some stuff at the gym and then driving home. Now I just go outside and I either go for a long intrepid walk if I can manage a 3 hour walk.
Marvelous.
Or running. But also I play musical instruments and I've taken up the piano.
Ooh. Fantastic. What other instruments do you play apart from the piano?
I play the trumpet. I'm self-taught on the guitar. I'm not brilliant on the guitar, but the piano, I found a wonderful, eccentric, beautiful, artistic, professional musician, teacher, who teaches me via WhatsApp, and I have a couple of lessons a week, and it's brilliant. And I'm learning, you know, as an adult, she's taught me to play more like a jazz musician, so learning by ear.
Do you find it harder now you're sort of grown up, that it's harder to learn? I mean, that's one thing I found about instruments as well. It's like if you didn't pick it up when you were a kid, you're like, oh man, it takes ages.
Of course, to learn to play piano, if I was going to learn in a classical way, as I learned the trumpet from scratch, it would take me years and years and years.
Right.
But if you find someone who's able to teach you as an adult, who is used to doing it, it's different.
Yeah.
You can learn to play by pattern and by ear and learn music theory in a practical way. And I think I've been learning since January with this teacher, and I can now play about 8 or 9 different songs competently.
Fantastic. But in a kind of a free-form jazz style. Sort of thing,
like a
John Coltrane.
I wish, maybe in 10 years. No, what I mean is, she teaches one to play in a way in which jazz musicians would have learned. They wouldn't have learned how to notate.
Right.
They might have learned a bit of it. I learned chord structures and learn how to hear harmony, and it gives me a lot of joy. Really does.
Oh, good. Well, that's lovely. Music is a fantastic switch off as well. And there's so many people in our industry that actually have music or art as part of their kind of switch off. The amount of times since I've been doing this, everyone I've spoken to has either draw, they paint, they play an instrument or something. It's fantastic to see. So we'll have to get. I can't wait for the first business development convention, and then everybody can play in the big old band that will strike up then as well.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
Well, I was going to say, just before we part company and stuff, I know you're busy and you've got other things to do, but what's coming up now for you and for the hand? I mean, in terms of how people can get hold of you, and have you got any kind of webinar stuff activity going on, or obviously the meetings is out of the question right now, but I mean, how are you substituting things?
The front end of what we do with clients, any client that we're involved in, is the strategy and the road mapping. And over the years, I also offer agencies training, you know, whether it's in-house teams, people they're recruiting, or their own, you know, teams in terms of, you know, sales techniques, communication skills. And one of the things that agencies find very useful is that strategy, that bird's eye road mapping. And so I'm running, and I used to run them, you know, half-day workshops and day workshops, you know, in central London in spaces, and that's changed. But I'm planning a series of these workshops through August, September and October, and they will be virtual, and it'll be one-on-one, because obviously there'll be secrets that agencies have that they want to keep from each other, but that's what we're offering.
Oh, lovely.
We'll go live on our site soon. But basically, we're keeping busy, keeping our existing client base very happy as well.
Good, good. Yeah. Well, we'll put signposts up on the show as well for those as well, in case people are interested. And obviously, people can get hold of you through LinkedIn, and obviously the emails on your website.
LinkedIn via the website, natasha@thehand.co.uk. And also, there's an info part that you can add your three top desires in the business. You can pop that in there. But also via the DBA. I'm on their experts panel, so you can contact that way as well. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Well, that's it. Job done, Natasha. You've done a great job. Thank you very much. I know you've already helped a lot of company owners work out what it is they need from their sales and how they can maximize it. So, but thank you anyway for coming on the show, and I hope we can see you again soon. So all the best, Natasha. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Take care.
Best of luck. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And there you have it. Natasha delivers in spades, and if you made it this far, you now know a hell of a lot more about the workings of the new business industry. In summary, and I speak from deep personal experience, new business people don't just come in like angels and make all your troubles disappear. Good new business people will come in and tell it to you straight, like any decent doctor.
You need to take a holistic look at why you need new business and how you're going to get it, including having the entire company tuned into the process. These are highly paid and highly rewarded professionals. And as much as any new business professional worth their salt wants to have your unrelenting praise poured over them, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. This is why new business is an ongoing process and not a quick fix. Done well, new business is a star whose light we can all bathe in. It's a vital function of every company, and agencies live or die by its success. In this socially distanced world, there's a new set of skills being developed, and we're proud to be among the pioneering founding fathers of the industry. If you would like to speak to Natasha and her team, the contact details can be found in the show notes at www.thefuelpodcast.com. It just remains for me to say thanks again to Natasha for our informative and entertaining chat. I'd like to thank my team at the Fuel Podcast, you know who you are, Barney and Peter Banks for the music, but mostly you, our listeners, out there in the challenging environment of the new business industry, helping your agencies forge their destinies. So that's it. Another show off to the British Library for filing. We've got some great interviews on the way, so make sure you click subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Join us on Twitter at @fuel_podcast, via our website at thefuelpodcast.com, or through The Advertist, the platform for hungry new business developers. And really, shouldn't that include you?